Hi, I'm Megan M. Riley from MeganMRiley.com. I'm a natural born psychic and sexual empowerment coach, and you are listening to Women's Guide to Living the Orgasmic Life. Hello, goddesses. Welcome back. Thank you for being here. Today is the much anticipated and requested blowjob episode. Charlie Glickman is back with us. He is sexpert, sex and relationship coach, and also the author of the book, The Ultimate Guide to Prostate Pleasure. Charlie and I recorded an episode a couple of weeks ago on prostate massage that was just really good. So if you haven't yet heard that, please do take a listen and let us know what you think. A few thoughts from today. First of all, that good blowjobs really do start with the C word, communication. How to open up communication with your partner for really epic blowjobs. Number two, some resources on where to find more on technique so that you really can be comfortable and have the confidence that what you're giving is the pleasure that you want to give. And a neat distinction about being able to receive pleasure by giving pleasure to your partner. We would love to hear what you think. Like this episode. Share this episode. Tag us on social media. You can find Charlie on Facebook and Instagram, Charlie Glickman. And you can always find me Facebook, Instagram, and webpage, Megan M. Riley. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the blowjob episode. Charlie Glickman, welcome back.
Thank you. It's always wonderful to see you again.
Likewise. This is one of my favorite subjects ever. Right behind G-Spot is blowjobs. So thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
So many women, well, we don't really get education, which is criminal. We need to change that. But our experience usually has something to do with being in high school and trying to figure it out on our own. I hear from a lot of women who still are cautious and not confident in what they're doing. And we've all have had the experience, or the women I have talked to have had the experience of their head pushed down in high school or even college, and then are cautious and don't know really what to do, don't know what's working, don't know what's not working. And then we don't have the relationship where we can communicate and find out.
Yes, to all of that. I agree. I've heard all of these things. And I think part of the problem that you're describing comes from, well, there's two pieces that are sort of interrelated. One of them is this idea that the motion or the action in a blowjob is somehow supposed to mimic intercourse, right? So it's just thrust in as deep as you can go, in, out. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that if that's what you like to do, but it seems rather limited to me. Connected to that, or related to that, is the fact that a lot of us get our sex education either from porn or from the people we're having sex with. And particularly right. When you're talking about high school or college age folks, well, where are they learning about it from? And what shows up in porn is what is easy to film on camera. So it's the in-out kind of thing. It's why you very rarely see cunnilingus in porn. Mm. You see it occasionally, but not very often. And to a large degree, it's because you can't really see what's happening, right? When somebody's going down on a woman, right? It's just the camera's there. You can't see anything. So that's one of the issues with porn generally. But the way that plays out with blowjobs is, you know, it's just in and out for, you know, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, and then we switch to the intercourse.
Right.
And that seems like a real problem. There have been many surveys done over the years asking people what they like about sex or whatever. And one of the things that shows up over and over again when they ask men what they like about blowjobs or what makes a blowjob really amazing, consistently the answer is my partner's enthusiasm.
Ah.
It's difficult to be enthusiastic about something that you're not enjoying. And it's difficult to be enthusiastic about giving a blowjob when your partner is just grabbing your head and trying to shove his cock down your throat.
Yes. And that we women don't really or haven't had the freedom to ask, how do you like to be touched? How do you like this? And that it will change from partner to partner. So many women don't feel like they can ask, and that it should be just an inherent talent that we have. We wake up, we are born knowing how to give a good blowjob.
Yeah, well, and even when you do ask somebody, what do you like? Most of the time, your answer is going to be, oh, everything you're doing feels amazing.
Right, right. Yes.
Because, you know, how many people have the language to say, I really like it when you take the head of my cock in your mouth and swirl the tip with your tongue.
So we need to change that. And this is one of the reasons I'm so excited to have you here. We need to change that and have women be able to ask the question and then keep asking, not just everything you're doing feels amazing.
Well, and it's interesting because whenever anybody says, oh, I like the usual stuff. Well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Right? Or when people say things like, oh, I like everything. I don't have any limits. I bet if your partner bit down really hard, you would probably find you have a limit there. And you're right, people vary. There are some folks who want all the attention on the head. All the attention on the balls. It's too much on the head. I like it on the chest. There's a lot more variety and variation than most people recognize. So you're absolutely right. Every time you're with somebody new, you don't know what they're going to enjoy.
Right.
And you know, any more than if I invite you over for dinner and I don't ask you what kind of food you like. Maybe you like it spicy. Maybe you hate broccoli. I don't know. And I would much rather ask before I go to the trouble of cooking you dinner.
Yes. You know, a gluten-full dinner where I just nod my head and say, oh, yes, this is so good. And then have an anxiety attack later because it was gluten.
Exactly. So I think there's a few different pieces to disentangle. I think the first thing is for the giver, and I'm going to gender this partly because most couples are male-female, but also because the gender dynamics and gender socialization is different. Not that gay men and men who have sex with men don't face some of the same challenges. Mm-hmm. But it can be very challenging for many, many women to tune into their enthusiasm for sex. Part of that is slut shaming, right? Like if he sees how much I like this, is he going to think there's something wrong with me? There are a lot of factors, forces, experiences that encourage women to go into compliance. And what I mean by compliance is going along with something that you don't really want to do, but you'd rather do it than deal with the drama of saying no. And sometimes compliance comes from within, past experiences or messages. Sometimes it comes from your partner. Like if you say no and he rolls his eyes and gets all huffy and then you've got 3 days of him acting upset.
Right.
There's that. You know, when you put these pieces together, it can be really difficult for women to tap into their enthusiasm. And then blowjobs just become a question of like, how long do I have to do this before we're done? So my first thought is as much as possible, and I recognize there are reasons why people do this, but as much as possible, don't do anything sexually if you feel like you're going into compliance or enduring. And I recognize that that's not always easy to notice. And even when you do notice, it's not always easy to say anything about because, you know, reasons.
Right.
So to the degree possible, the less you're in compliance and endurance, the more you can be in your enthusiasm. So that's step one. Step two is it possible for you to find something that you enjoy about giving blowjobs? Maybe it's that you really like the texture or the taste or the sensation on your lips. Can you tune into the pleasure in your lips or in your tongue or in your mouth? Do you get turned on tapping into your partner's pleasure? Maybe it's asking your partner, like, hey, you know, you just lie there. I would enjoy this more if you would make some sounds, right? Or if you would say to me, oh, yeah, that feels really good. Keep doing that. Or, oh, wow, that feels amazing. Could you do it a little softer or a little firmer? Getting some of that feedback.
And the thing I hear is missing most is to be able to communicate. And especially with a new partner, we assume that we know what to do with that person. We may go into compliance with that. And then they're concerned about showing too much enthusiasm or have heard about having our heads pushed down. There's so much that's not said.
Yeah, there's a huge amount that's not said. And part of it is, okay, so if you're giving somebody a blowjob and he puts his hands on the back of your head, well, first off, some people are just doing that to hold your hair out of the way. Mm-hmm. Although if you have long hair, maybe a hairband would be a useful thing. Some partners are doing it because they like the sensation of it. That's very different from grabbing your head and pushing you down. If your partner starts to do that, I'm a big fan of, you know, taking your hands to his wrists and pulling them away, right? And just signaling, no, I don't want that. Or I don't want that now. Maybe I'll want that in 10 minutes, but I'm not ready for that yet. Mm. This is another one of the places where, you know, learning to have sex from porn is like learning to drive from watching a car chase movie. You're going to get hurt. You're going to get hurt. It just happens. You know, the folks who are in porn practice a lot. Most of us in real life are not having that kind of sex that often. So, you know, our bodies might not be ready for it. Or women tend to have more narrow jawlines, which is why, you know, men who give blowjobs to other men, they make it look so easy frequently. Having a wider jawline makes a difference. Things fit better.
Oh my goodness. I never thought about that.
Yeah. Most women don't.
Huh. I learned how to deep throat from a gay man on a beer bottle.
Yeah.
And it seemed so much easier.
Yeah. Wider jawlines.
Uh-huh.
It's actually the same reason why I've talked with a lot of women who have told me that when they kiss men, it feels like he's just trying to engulf their entire face with his mouth. His mouth literally opens wider.
Yes.
So imagine how that...
In my chin and yeah.
Yeah. So you could see how that would translate to blowjobs.
Absolutely.
So there's that. I think you're right that it's all about communication, but I'm always hesitant to say that because people roll their eyes. You know, I've been a sex educator for almost 30 years. People roll their eyes whenever I say it's about communication because we're so tired of hearing that.
Right. And that it doesn't have to be sitting down and talking about our feelings. I don't want my partner to be feminine like that. I want my partner to be masculine. And while we do talk about emotion and what something will feel like and what he enjoys, sitting down and communicating is not exciting.
Yeah, so that doesn't work for you.
Right.
I've talked with plenty of folks who find that it helps them feel safer when their partner is able to communicate in those ways. I think one of the pieces that we're starting to unpack as a culture is how men can talk about our emotions, but doing it differently than the way that women tend to. And I think there's a whole different skill set that we're starting to uncover. I think there's probably a lot of overlap in that Venn diagram, but I don't think that anybody needs to communicate in any particular way. Some of us take one approach, some of us take another, and that's totally fine. But at the very least, if you can't say to your partner something like, wow, that feels really good, but it's also starting to feel a little hypersensitive, so could you change up what you're doing? Or, oh, I really like it when you touch me that way when I'm softer, but when I get really firm, I need it to switch like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what would it be like if we could actually give that sort of feedback to folks?
That'd be so awesome.
That's a lot of what I do as a coach, is helping people find their words for things like that.
When we were talking about the prostate massage, you mentioned an exercise that you do, like wrist to elbow.
Yeah.
Could that be useful here?
Yeah. So what you're talking about is Betty Martin's 3-minute game. And this is an exercise. If you go to bettymartin.org and look for her videos, she explains this far more eloquently than I do. She's amazing. But she talks about how challenging it can be to tell someone what you want. And so an exercise that she co-created that I learned from her is practicing touching your partner's arm just from the elbow down to the hand for 3 minutes. So you set a timer on your phone, and for 3 minutes, their job is to tell you how to touch them. Little circles, long scratches, tapping your finger, squeeze my arm, massage my palm with your thumb, you know, whatever it is. And then practicing giving more refinement, like do that a little softer, do that a little deeper, and finding the language so that you can then translate that to, you know, stroke your hand across the head of my cock or run your tongue up and down the shaft. We're not used to giving people these kinds of directions. And the same thing happens for body work, where somebody will get on the massage table and the massage therapist will be doing something. And no matter what it is, people go into enduring and they wait for it to be over. And what happens is, as soon as we go into enduring, our arousal goes out the window. So if your partner's not doing it the way you want, tell them. Or if you choose not to tell them, then at least acknowledge that the reason why they're not doing what you want is partly because you're not telling them, right? And own your responsibility for that.
Yes, which will then increase cortisol, right?
Exactly. Well, yes. And I want to acknowledge that all of this assumes an equitable relationship dynamic where you don't have to worry about being yelled at or punished or shamed for saying what you want. Because there are relationships where if you say what you want, those things do happen.
Yes.
So I want to acknowledge the power dynamics.
And this is also assuming that we are in a commitment. Well, this is a really sex positive listening. We also then say, no, not to jump into anything with oxytocin trance, orgasm trance. Don't jump into anything that then we don't know who this person actually is. This person is someone that we trust. We can open our heart and our body to them and ask these questions.
So I have a few suggestions for ways people can figure out what to do, because it's tricky to know what to do when you don't have an idea about different techniques. And again, porn movies all show the same thing over and over again.
Right.
So one thing is there are some really good books and videos that show you lots of different amazing techniques. I'm a fan of Violet Blue's book, The Ultimate Guide to Fellatio. It's a fabulous book. I also like Tristan Taramino's videos, The Expert Guide to Fellatio. Because what I like about the videos is you can see what people are doing, and then there's a voiceover describing the different techniques. And the way that you can use these kinds of resources is make a note of some different things you want to try, and then try them with your partner and ask him, hey, scale of 1 to 10, how good did that feel? Or do a technique for a minute or two, do a second technique for a minute or two, and then ask them which one they like more. It's like going to the eye doctor. Which one is clearer, A or B? Which one feels better, A or B? The most important thing when you're doing this kind of exploration, the most important two things. One is treat it like a wine tasting. If you do a wine tasting and you taste 5 different wines and you only like one of them, that doesn't mean that the experience was a failure. If you try 5 or 10 different blowjob techniques and you find 1 or 2 that your partner really, really loves, that's awesome.
Yes.
That's a win. The second thing is that if they say they don't like a particular technique, they're not judging you as a lover. They're telling you about that particular technique. You could be an amazing chef, and I just don't happen to like spicy food. That doesn't mean you're a bad chef. It means I need you to cook something a little milder for me. Mm-hmm. So if your amazing technique that has curled the toes of every other partner you've been with doesn't work for this particular partner, that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. Right? And that's really important, because it's easy to go into a shame loop if your partner says, oh, I don't like that.
Absolutely.
Easiest way to stay out of that is when your partner says, oh, I don't like that technique, say, thanks for telling me. Not only does that make it easier for them to give you feedback, but it reminds you to be grateful that they're giving you that feedback. So yeah, thanks for telling me. I won't do that.
That's really great.
I want to circle back to one other piece, which is the enthusiasm question. If you're not enthusiastic or if you're not enjoying it, that's a good place to ask yourself why. And there could be lots of reasons. Maybe you just don't like giving blowjobs, in which case maybe you need to tell your partner, hey, I don't really like doing this. So, you know, I'll do it for a few minutes because you like it, but I'm going to stop. Or I don't really like doing this, so I'm not going to. If the reason why you're not feeling enthusiastic is because of relationship issues, like you're feeling resentment towards your partner because of something completely unrelated, like they leave their dirty clothes all over the floor or whatever it is, resentment is the biggest libido killer. And that's going to be something that you really need to look at and unpack and work through, because trying to have sex with somebody while you're feeling resentment towards them, it just doesn't work. But the reason why it doesn't work is resentment is withheld anger. And how can I open up to you and have an amazing experience where we're really connected if I'm withholding my anger? If I'm withholding my anger, I'm withholding my pleasure. That's just how the human nervous system works. Brené Brown points out that you can't turn off just one feeling.
Yes.
And I think this is the same thing.
There's a lot of couples who do have that. They do have resentment about housework or money or something, and then try to continue a sexual relationship, stacking on top of, on top of, on top of.
Yeah.
You get a lot of couples that come to you with maybe a sexual problem and it turns out to be about housework?
Oh, frequently. Most of the time, what people think of as sexuality issues or sexuality problems really have a lot less to do with sex than they realize. Maybe they're fighting over money. Maybe somebody lost their job and they're stressed out. Maybe there's a history of built-up resentment in the relationship. A lot of it is people not understanding their bodies. I once talked with a guy. He came to talk to me because he was having erection difficulties and he wanted to know if cock rings would help. And as I talked with him, it came out that he had lost his job. His house was in foreclosure and he and his wife were arguing all the time about money.
Oh.
And he didn't understand that the reason why he wasn't getting erections was because he was stressed out and hurt. And he was hoping that a cock ring would fix it. That wasn't what he needed. You know, what he needed was some support in figuring out how to talk to his partner about all of these things that were going on. So yeah, a lot of the time we think that they're sexuality problems and it's really not super common.
This is a big one because there are so many things, again, not said, but yeah. It's more about the rest of our lives than our bedroom life.
Yeah.
So what would you suggest to women who do have underlying resentments?
That's tricky because it depends a lot on the situation. There's some partners, some men who you can sit down and you can talk with them and they'll do their best to hear it and move through it. That's great. But there's a lot of men who don't have the emotional skills. Not only do boys not get taught emotional skills, they actively get shamed and traumatized and abused away from having emotional skills because that would make them like girls. You end up trying to have a conversation with somebody who simply doesn't have the tools to be able to do it. One way that you can tell, and this is something especially for the men listening to this, one way you can tell that this is going on for you is you start saying things like, "See what you made me do."
Mm.
But see what you made me do translates as you're doing this thing and I don't know how to handle it, so I'm going to try to blame you for it. And that's true in many different situations. So for guys in that kind of circumstance, there's a book I really like called Nothing's Wrong, A Man's Guide to Managing His Emotions, I think is the second part of that title. It's for the guys who you say, "Hey, what's going on for you? You seem upset." "Oh, nothing's wrong."
Mm.
That's the book.
Okay, good.
And then, you know, there's situations where men get really upset or overwhelmed or triggered and they go into fight flight. And fight shows up as criticism or verbal abuse or physical abuse, and flight shows up as avoidance or disengaging or running away. That's a more serious issue. I like the book, Why Does He Do That? That's more about why men who do abusive things do them. And it's a pretty compassionate book, I have to say. But if these are the kinds of things that you're dealing with, this is a good place to find a therapist or a coach because there are skills to learn. And that's not something you can really learn from your partner. That's something you need to get from an objective outside source.
That's a great point. So when people come to you, they may come to you about sexuality, but it turns into everything else.
It really does. It turns into how do you handle conflict? What do you do when you feel disappointment? What are your actual emotional desires and needs that you're trying to meet through sex? Why are you trying to use sex to fulfill your need for physical touch? Like, what would it be like to have physical touch that was non-erotic? All of these pieces. Do you have a history of trauma or sexual abuse? There's a lot of pieces that come into play here. It makes sense to me that for a lot of men, it becomes easier to just say, "Oh, I love what you're doing. Keep doing that." Of course it is, but I don't buy it. But I wanted to loop back to the piece about enthusiasm, because this is another thing that I got from Betty Martin. She talks about two kinds of touch. One of them is where I'm touching for your pleasure. like I'm giving you a back rub, you've got sore neck muscles, right? The goal is for you to feel better or for you to feel pleasure. And that's the kind of sexual touch that mostly we think of as being a good lover. It's why there's so many books about, you know, 14 blowjob techniques and 17 different G-spot moves, right? It's all about I'm giving to you for your pleasure.
Yes.
But there's another kind of touch, which is where I'm touching you for my pleasure and you're allowing me to do this. So I want to be clear that I'm doing this. I'm describing something that's happening within the boundary of consent. If I'm doing something to you for my pleasure that's not within your consent, that's sexual assault. Mm-hmm. Right? So we're talking about keeping this within consent, but we hear about things like this, like, oh, I really love giving oral sex. It's not even important to me whether you have an orgasm or not. I want you to enjoy it, but this is because I enjoy this. Or if you run your hands through your partner's hair because you like the way it feels on your hand. Right? So that's taking your pleasure. I actually think that taking pleasure or allowing your partner to take pleasure is one of the sexiest things you can do, because you can feel when your partner is enjoying themselves. Right? This is the place where the enthusiasm comes in. And learning to take your pleasure from someone, you know, again, within consent, it's actually a lot harder than people realize. When I do the arm touch exercise, you know, we do this too, right? So now you're going to touch my arm in the ways that feel good to your hands. And people frequently start shifting into giving. And I have to remind them, no, wait, this is about you. Don't give to me. Take for yourself.
That's
and
so great.
Because it's hard.
We spend so much time in enduring, in doing something for then our partner.
Yeah.
What a wonderful distinction.
It makes a huge difference. And the thing about it is we can move through all of these different dynamics, right? It's not like you have to say to your partner, okay, tonight I'm going to be in taking. So that is what you can be very fluid with it. But there's something really powerful about having the experience of having your partner take their pleasure by giving you a blowjob. It's amazing. That's the enthusiasm that so many people are looking for.
So how can we initiate that? How can we start that conversation?
I think one way to do it is to learn how to enjoy the sensual pleasures just for your own sake. You may have done like a meditation exercise where they give you a raisin and you're supposed to eat that raisin as slowly as possible for as long as you... Have you ever done this exercise?
Yes. Yes.
Right, that. And you can spend an amazing amount of time touching and running it across your lips and putting it in your mouth and the texture and the taste. Right? So can you tune into the sensual pleasures in your mouth? You know, you can practice this with food. Can you really enjoy the taste and the texture and the sound and the entire experience? How slowly can you eat that bite of food? Or drinking a glass of wine, right? When people do wine tasting, like, can you really tune into that? I think that's a really good first piece. I think a second piece is, how do you then let your partner see that? How do you express that to them? You know, can you make sounds while you're going down on him? Can you show him with, you know, your body language that you're enjoying it? You know, I've talked to some women who say that it works easier for them if they are using their hand or a vibrator to stimulate their clitoris while they're going down, because that keeps the level of erotic energy in their body up. Then the guy can feel that coming towards them.
Hmm.
So, you know, can you keep that level of energy up? And can you be selfish about it? I heard somebody once say that amazing sex means balancing being selfless and selfish. Selfless is I'm touching for you. Selfish is I'm touching for me. Can you really let yourself just do what you want to do? And what would that look like for you?
Hmm.
And if you can't imagine doing that while giving your partner a blowjob, maybe it suggests that you don't really like giving blowjobs, or at least not with that partner.
Right. Or something unhealed.
Yeah. There's something going on there to look at.
So many women I've spoken to think they don't enjoy blowjobs. They really just don't. And that is non-negotiable. And then after we tease that out a little bit, there was something that happened and then something else that happened and they just decided they don't enjoy blowjobs.
Yeah.
And then often at the end of working together, they do very much enjoy blowjobs.
You're right. And sometimes it requires a very frank conversation with your partner, like, hey, you know, I would enjoy giving you a blowjob more if you trimmed your pubic hair, getting in my way. Or I would enjoy giving you a blowjob more if you stopped trimming your pubic hair, because I enjoy that. Or maybe it's, yeah, I would enjoy giving you blowjobs more if at the end of the day, when you've been busy and running around and everything, you took a shower first.
Yes. Right?
Lots of things. Or I would enjoy giving you blowjobs more if you made some sounds, if you moved your hips, if you let me know when I was doing something that felt good, because I can't tell. You know, you're just lying there.
So good. You mentioned toys. A lot of people are uncomfortable bringing up the subject of toys. And we talked about this a little bit in prostate massage, but how can women or the men listening bring up the topic?
I guess it depends on the context. I mean, I'm a big fan of sex toys. What I like about sex toys is sometimes they just give you a different kind of sensation. There is no part of the human body that can create the same sensation as a vibrator.
Right.
There just isn't. Sometimes it just makes things a little easier. Like, you know, if 70% of women need clitoral stimulation to reliably orgasm, why not use a vibrator and make that easier?
Yes.
You know, I think of vibrators as like cordless screwdrivers. You don't need it to get the job done, but it sure does make things easier. The trick is that a lot of people have this idea that sex toys mean that you're not a good lover. And I think being a good lover means let's figure out what works for your body. Sometimes it's a question of having the information, like, hey, if 70% of women need clitoral stimulation, by definition, that is what's normal. I don't usually use that word, but, you know, mm-hmm. statistically. Mm-hmm. And I've talked with plenty of men who, once they have that information, they realize, oh, wait, this isn't because I'm not a good lover. This is just how my partner's body is. Okay, let's move on from that. I guess the other thing is it depends on the relationship. If you're with a new partner, maybe you just want to grab the vibrator out of the bedside table and like not even make a deal about it and just start using it. In the same way that like if you need a pillow under your head while you're on your back, you're not going to say to your partner, oh, hey, do you mind if I grab a pillow? My neck needs some support. You're just going to grab a pillow and do it.
Yes.
If you're with an established partner where using toys would be a change, you might say something like, hey, I was listening to this podcast and it turns out this is what's going on. Or, you know, I've always wanted to try a vibrator. You know, would you be up for doing that? Or I like using a vibrator solo and I'd love to start bringing that into our sex play together. The more direct you can be about it, the easier sometimes it is for our partners to hear it. And if you need some science, check out the book, Come As You Are.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much for that recommendation.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's an amazing book.
And then if it does come up with shame, I think this is a great circle back to the enthusiasm. So if he then does respond with a level of shame of, I am not a good enough lover, or why is it that you need something outside of me, back to the enthusiasm of, I just want to share this with you.
Yeah. Okay. I think back to the enthusiasm, or this is just how my body is. If somebody gets caught in the shame loop around that, it's hard for partners to support somebody through that because it's about you. It's very difficult to support someone around their shame when the shame is coming up between the two of you. This is a really good place for him to get some outside support. I might suggest phrasing it as, you know, every time we talk about this or every time I suggest doing this, you get really upset and you seem to have a lot of challenges around it. That seems like something that, you know, you might want to talk to someone about.
Extraordinary. And here's where I think an opening for a coach might be a little bit easier than a therapist.
Yeah.
Therapist, there's a connotation to it.
Yeah.
Do you find that to be easier as a coach?
I do. Well, it's interesting because I think that coaching and therapy, there's a huge amount of overlap, you know, in what we do. But the difference between coaching and therapy, one of the big ones is that coaching tends to be more focused on how do we get you to where you want. Therapy tends to be more focused on how did you get here. How to get to where you want, I find, needs to be informed by how you got here. But mostly I'm looking for how do we move forward. A sex coach, you know, I can give somebody the science and the statistics, And it's generally easier to hear from an expert than it is from your partner, even if your partner is also an expert. I mean, the question I always ask, hey, so if you start feeling upset when your girlfriend pulls out the vibrator, you know, what's up with that? What's the story you have with that? What's the sensation in your body around that? And where does that come from? And then we unpack that.
That's so powerful. We didn't learn relationship. We didn't learn communication. We didn't learn how to ask for what we need in relationship, much less in the bedroom.
Yeah. And sex is so fraught with many different emotions and past experiences. And, you know, maybe for me, the reason why I have trouble with your vibrator is because of the act like a man box. But maybe it's because I had a partner who had difficulty having an orgasm and she blamed me and told me that I was a bad lover, you know, and or maybe both. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of factors to unpack there.
So many things to heal, but so much that's possible after the other side.
There's amazing pleasure there. And this is actually reminding me because we were talking about, you know, the enthusiasm of the giver, but I want to circle back to the enthusiasm of the receiver, because a lot of men are really silent in bed,
mm-hmm.
right? Like it's silence, silence, silence. And then as they orgasm, there's, and then that's it.
Right.
And so I would like to invite the guys out there to try to bring a little bit more breath, movement, and sound into their sexual experience. You know, don't hold your breath, don't stay still, and don't be silent. To frame it positively, make sure you're still breathing, bring some movement into your body, and let your sound come out. It's not reasonable to ask your partner to show her enthusiasm if you're withholding yours.
Thank you, Charlie. Yeah. Yes. And gentlemen, please, you have a partner there. There is a woman there with you. And to move and to breathe and to interact with her. And this isn't masturbating in your parents' house when you're 15. There is an interaction going.
And you raise a really good point there, because Joseph Kramer once said, you know, we don't eat the same food at 15 as we do at 50. But why are we masturbating the same way? And what he meant by that is so many of us learn to masturbate as quickly and quietly as possible so we don't get caught.
Yes.
Right? And so we need to break out of that. You know, let your sounds out. If you're worried about your neighbors hearing, you know, put a pillow over your mouth.
Right.
Or turn up the music, inspire them, you know, whatever. Depends on your neighbors.
And in Tantra, we talk the fifth chakra and the sex chakra are connected. And so being more vocal then turns on the sex chakra even more.
It does. I actually once talked with somebody who was a singing teacher, and she specialized in working with adults who had never learned, who wanted to learn to sing. And many of them had been shamed for like singing badly as children or made fun of or whatever. And what she found was that as people were learning to open up their voices and relaxing their throat, that many of them started to go through a sexual healing because their pelvic floor was relaxing. So that's exactly what you're talking about. They are absolutely connected.
Or then being in the gym. A lot of women report cervical orgasms in the gym. I certainly do dancing. So we are connected.
Yeah, everything's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, just as an aside for that, Debbie Herbenick at the University of Indiana, part of the Kinsey Institute, she did a research paper on corgasms.
Oh.
You know, women who can orgasm from doing core exercises. And it's more common than people realize. So yeah, she might be an interesting thing to look up.
I was living in Bloomington and I did a research study because it was during the time that I was studying Tantra. And so I figured, you know, a little bit different. And they hooked me up to all sorts of electrodes and things. Mm. And I watched American porn and then European porn and measured the difference. It was different. And European porn is so much less than about what looks good on camera. Really interesting experience.
They do some great research there.
Let's go through the books and videos that you would recommend, technique.
I like Violet Blue's Ultimate Guide to Fellatio and her book, The Ultimate Guide to Cunnilingus. They're a little denser than the videos, so you have to be like, there's just much more information, but I really like those a lot. Tristan Taramino's Expert Guide to Fellatio, and I think the other one was Expert Guide to Advanced Oral Sex. If you look up Tristan Taramino videos, you'll find them. I'm a big fan of her stuff. You know, there's a lot of books and websites and things out there, but it is hard to find good info. So I recommend, like, you know, read the reviews. If you find information on the internet, take it with a grain of salt unless you see it in other places, because you don't know what somebody's credentials are. That was the other one I like, is Red Hot Touch by Jaya. J-A-I-Y-A, more focused on erotic massage, but there's some useful tips there for hand jobs that can also be adapted to oral sex. You know, like ways to use your hands and your mouth at the same time. So yeah, those are some of my favorites for sure.
Brilliant. If someone is having what they think is sexuality problems, or how do I initiate, or being uncomfortable with blowjobs, being uncomfortable with sex, how do we find you?
My website is makesexeasy.com, and I offer a free half-hour consultation call because I'm not always the right fit for folks. So that gives us a chance to talk about what's going on. If I'm not the right match, I'll do my best to point you in some other directions. And I work with folks in person in Seattle, where I live, or over video. So I work with folks all over the world. And you can also find me on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and everywhere else as Charlie Glickman. So I'm very easy to track down.
Charlie, thank you so, so much.
Thank you, Megan. It's always fun to talk with you.
This is Megan Riley. You have been listening to The Women's Guide to Living the Orgasmic Life. If you'd like more information, my website is meganmriley.com. And go shake those hips!